I'm Marco Werman, and this is The World. When we hear about refugees these days, we tend to think of the people fleeing the war in Syria and hoping for a new life in Europe. But the world's largest refugee camp is not in Europe or the Middle East. It's in Kenya. It's called Dadaab. The first residents arrived at the camp a quarter century ago in the early 1990s.
There was a civil war that ripped Somalia apart in the late 80s, early 90s, and the UN and the US tried to intervene. You may remember the Black Hawk Down incident of 1993, but there have been no real successful attempts to bring peace to Somalia since, and it's been more or less without a government since that time.
That's Ben Rawlins, author of a book about the Dadaab refugee camp called City of Thorns. He's been there several times. Rawlins says Dadaab was supposed to be a temporary camp for 90,000 people, but the population there now is 500,000. Because of the ongoing chaos and extremist violence in Somalia. And as he told my colleague Jeb Sharp, that even though Dadaab is as big as a city, it has no real infrastructure.
The Kenyan government doesn't allow permanent houses, doesn't allow permanent roads, no permanent power, no proper sanitation. So when the rains come, you have cholera epidemics, you have all kinds of health problems.
And you talk about hunger actually being a currency at the camp. What do you mean by that?
Well, people aren't allowed to work. This is one of the other restrictions that the Kenyan government imposes, and many governments do this. They don't allow asylum seekers and refugees to work and earn a living. And that means that they are reliant on the food rations, which are provided by the United Nations. But the food rations is only rice or sorghum or maize and beans. If you want tea or sugar, if you want vegetables, or maybe you want to buy some clothes in the market, you need cash. And the only way you can actually get cash, the only thing you can monetize, is your food. So people often go hungry, will sell their rations in order to buy luxuries or to diversify their diet. They'd rather have good food for a week and then go hungry for a week.
Ben Rawlins, you talk about the UN actually cutting rations at the camp. How is that possible?
Well, it's happened every year for the last 3 years, and that's because the UN is facing a funding crunch, partly because of the increased numbers in Syria, many more refugees around the world. I mean, I certainly thought it wasn't possible. I was shocked when I found out that it happened and that it has happened in the past as well. So people are actually dying as a result of those ration cuts. And to me, that's the biggest crime, the fact that you ask people to stay in this camp, you don't allow them to work, you don't allow them to leave, and then you don't feed them either. I mean, imagine if you put, you know, lock people up in a prison somewhere and then actually didn't feed the inmates. That would be a bit of a scandal, I think.
What's the trajectory and where are we headed with Dadaab?
Well, it's gotten worse and worse and worse as the camp has become more and more overcrowded and as donors have gotten very tired of funding it and the Kenyan government is losing patience and keeps saying that the camp should be closed. And then, of course, the security situation within Kenya has deteriorated, even as it has remained unstable in Somalia. It's getting worse in Kenya as Al-Shabaab's making more and more incursions. And every time there's a terrorist attack in Kenya, the government starts blaming the refugees and calling for the camp to be closed again. So there's this sort of official movement to try and squeeze the refugees and make life harder and harder for them. And it is, to some extent, working. We are seeing a slow trickle of people going back into Somalia, back to the war, principally because conditions in the camp are so bad. You know, but it's not enough to sort of wipe the city, this city, which is actually the size of New Orleans. It's not enough to wipe that city off the face of the earth because there is a core population that has invested in businesses, you know, hotels and shops and cinemas and so on, and people who do not want to go back to Somalia under any circumstances. So I don't see an end to Dadaab anytime soon. I think that what we need to do is accept the permanence of these places, and Dadaab, of course, is one of many, and stop treating them as temporary. If you start with a permanent footing, and then you can begin to allow people to invest, to build lives that are a little more humane than this kind of the bare minimum of subsistence, which is what they have at the moment.
How do you get out of there? How do you go forward instead of back to Somalia?
There are very few legal routes out of the camp, which is partly why it's so big. One is to go back to Somalia into the war. One is to buy a Kenyan ID card or passport, but that's very expensive and very few people have that kind of money. The other way is to get resettled to the United States or to Europe, but that is a lottery, and only 1,000 people a year get picked to go to the US, and the birth rate in the camp is 1,000 a month. So there's very few people who actually can leave the camp through that legal route. And the last option is the illegal route. So Guled, one of the people in the book, the first character that appears, the first person I follow, at the end of the book, he is left considering walking to Europe because his options in the camp are so limited. He can't go back to Somalia because he was kidnapped by al-Shabaab. He's fearing revenge there. And he wants to provide for his wife, who's had children in the camp. And he says to me, you know, the only option for me as a man to try and provide for my wife. So I have to get to Italy or I have to die trying. That's the only honorable solution for me.
You also introduce us to Abdullah Hassan, nicknamed Fish. Tell us about him a little bit.
Fish has the most wonderful nickname. Somalis have a really great tradition of nicknames. And he was called Fish because his grandfather didn't like fish and yet ran a fish restaurant on the beach in southern Somalia, in a very beautiful place. He came when he was 7 years old and has been there ever since. Got married in the camp, had children in the camp, grew up his whole life in the camp, all the while expecting some sort of future outside the camp. So he went through primary school, secondary school, obtained diplomas by distance learning, mail order in the camp. And yet when he got to that sort of glass ceiling, aged 28, 29, 30, was then confronted with the fact that there was no future for him. And he, like several other people in his generation, they call themselves the 92 group, the class of 92, if you like, the people who came right at the beginning. They were very dynamic. Him and Tawane's other person formed youth groups, started running football leagues, soccer leagues, also were patrolling the camp when the al-Shabaab threat surfaced and there were attacks in the camp. They began organizing the refugees to run services when the UN was too scared. And then, of course, they became a target. So they started getting anonymous phone calls from al-Shabaab. Several of his colleagues in the community security team were murdered. So he ran away to Nairobi and tried to find some kind of safety there.
Ben Rawlins there, speaking with my colleague Jeb Sharp. Rawlins is the author of City of Thorns, a book about the Dadaab refugee camp in Kenya. Tomorrow, we meet Fish, the Somali refugee we were just hearing about.
I came to Dadaab in 1992 with my mother and two other siblings. We were six and three of them died.
What it was like growing up in the world's largest refugee camp, that's tomorrow, right here on The World.